listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 202, The Black Cauldron, Dark Ages and the Dark Mark. The Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties, because it's time to dive into today's episode. Hey there, animation addicts. My name is Chelsea Robson.
And I'm Morgan Stradling.
And you are listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast. I am excited today because we are going to go way back into Disney canon and bring up one of those movies that just, you know, not many people watch for reasons.
but surprisingly, it's one of those ones that everyone kind of knows about, but no one wants to watch it. They either haven't watched it because they know it's bad, they've heard it's bad, or you've watched it and you're not going to watch it again because it's bad. And of course, if you haven't figured it out by yet, no, we are not talking about Chicken Little. We are talking about something even worse, even more dark, the dark, dark ages of Disney from this time period, The Black Cauldron. So I don't know why we decided to review this film. You know, sometimes the patrons will pick different movies and other times, you know, Chelsea and I just pick. And I just felt like doing a Disney film because I'm on a Disney kick right now. Who isn't always on a Disney kick? Let's be honest. And I just had a hankering for The Black Cauldron, which I will probably never say that phrase again in my life.
I hope not. Oh, unless your kid is like, "What's that?" And you're like, "No, like,
nope.
Those are that's the dark ages.
That's the dark shadowy place. We don't go there.
We don't go there." Oh, all right. Well,
this is our kingdom, the Disney
Renaissance. Jump on your magical pig. We're gonna jump into this prophetic pig. We're gonna be talking about this movie, and we're glad to have you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
So before we get started, let's set the stage for The Black Cauldron. There is a lot to discuss here, and this film has a lot of history as to why it is the way that it is, more so than usual. So, of course, all this information comes from the internet, Box Office Mojo, IMDb, Wikipedia, and so on and so forth. The studio, of course, was Walt Disney Animation Studios. Directors were Ted Berman and Richard Rich, who actually previously had directed The Fox and the Hound together. And so, hey, these guys did a great thing. Let's bring them on for this. We'll see how that goes. There were 18 other writers and story contributors, not including the original, the writer of the original novel. So, you know, there were a lot of hands that touched this along the way. We'll talk about that even more. Release date, July 26th, 1985. It had a budget of $44 million, which actually pretty interesting. Initially, people thought it was in the 20s, but in the documentary Waking Sleeping Beauty, Don Hall, he mentioned that at the time, this was the biggest budget for a Disney animated film at $44 million. So the real numbers came out significantly more than what people thought. And it hurt because the box office total, it just grossed $21.3 million. Fun fact, it lost to the Care Bears movie on opening weekend. So that is Disney, the behemoth, the amazing, the studio that brought you the likes of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Peter Pan and Cinderella, loses to a cheaply animated Care Bears movie. Let that sink in.
Oh, man. This was an interesting decade, though. Like, the 80s, and I feel like this movie kind of encapsulates a lot of what was happening. You know, it was brought to you by the same decade that created grim and complicated fantasy films such as Return to Oz and The Dark Crystal. So, you know, you have these different movies that are really trying to toe the line of being edgy and something that's, you know, not quite for kids and definitely more of the boy audience versus a girl audience with a Disney princess film. But yeah, it was interesting how this all happened. Like, what's so bad about this, not bad, but like what's sad about the whole thing is both Ted Berman and Richard Rich basically got ousted from Disney after this film. And
hey, someone's like, head's got a roll.
Yeah, well, and then
it's always the way in corporate America.
Yeah. Ted actually never directed another movie after that. And that's what hurts for me.
Right. He was older, though. He did die. He was born in 1919 and he died in 2001. So I think he was kind of at the tail end of his career where if this didn't really hit home and was a smash hit, there weren't really going to be that very many opportunities. Richard Rich, on the other hand, he, you know, took this and made something out of it. He created his own studio. You might know Richard Rich most famously from the Swan Princess series. He went to do a whole bunch of direct-to-video Christian films about different stories from the Bible, which were incredibly popular, and the Alpha and Omega series. So he has really taken this and turned it into something that was really great for him, where he has his own production company and is relatively successful. I mean, much more successful than me. Relatively successful. I mean, he's doing great. Let's just put it that way. He's continuing. The Swan Princess now has, there are the three original Swan Princesses and then 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So Swan Princess is the new Land Before Time, which I should totally watch all of those and do a YouTube video about those.
I agree. Saying, you should.
I watched all of the Swan Princess movies, so you don't have to. I am doing that. That is going to be my return to the Rotoscopers YouTube channel. I'm leading off with that. Sorry, we are totally tangent time, but it's okay because we're reviewing The Black Cauldron of all things, okay? So this is a little walk down memory lane for Richard Rich, which we like to do. We like to see, you know, what happened with these directors? What did they go on to do? So yeah, stay tuned. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, rotoscopers.com/YouTube. Because I got some movies to watch, some Swan Princess. Oh, there's a Swan Princess Christmas one that I missed.
Yes.
Oh, and another one right here. There's way more than I thought. Oh, wow.
There's a what lot have I got of myself Swan into? Princesses.
No. Okay, hold on. Let me start over again. One, two, Swan Princess, Escape from Castle Mountain, Mystery of the Enchanted Treasure, Sing Along. Then there is Swan Princess Christmas, Swan Princess A Royal Family Tale, Swan Princess Princess Tomorrow, Pirate Today, Royally Uncover, A Royal Mystery, spelt with a Z for some reason, and Kingdom of Music and A Royal Wedding. Whew. Okay, guys, I gotta work myself up for this, but it's gonna be good. But going back, This did not fare
just
well
let me
for
know
guys.
When you get to the point where they start doing a random lightsaber duel. That one was
that's a thing.
That's a thing.
They have lightsabers in the Swan Princess. Wow. Yes. I'm looking forward to this.
What's funny is I guess in the newer ones, and by newer I mean since 2015, they break the fourth wall, you know, a lot where they just know that they are just being kind of dumb and they kind of just go with it. So, like, the fact is there is a scene where they have a lightsaber duel and I'm like, what the heck am I watching? I was so, so lost, but it was all right, this is where we're at. It was on Netflix one time and I was like, I'm going to watch this. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, now I'm going to watch this too. Anyways, let's go back to what we actually are here to talk about. But Richard Rich, that's for another day. And the Swan Princess, maybe we'll have to watch one of those. Well, I clearly will be watching one of those. I volunteered myself. I volunteer as tribute. I don't know why. But so let's go back to the Black Cauldron. So this is known as the Bronze Age of the Disney era. So there's different eras in Disney canon, right? And so this one, the Bronze Age, basically goes from 1970 to 1988.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
513, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And I feel like even within this Bronze Age, you could have another age within there, which is just the Dark Age, because it just goes. I mean, I think the 70s, there's some pretty good things that come out of the 70s, but some of the things that come out of the 80s, specifically this one, this is the whatever the opposite of pinnacle is of Disney animation.
Oh, gosh. But I mean, I remember watching in Waking Sleeping Beauty when Don Hahn was talking about all of this and just the background story about it, how they decided that they were just going to cut a lot. There's like 15 minutes or something of the movie where they're like, this isn't working, so we're just going to cut this. And like all the animators were like, what? How dare you? Which I understand because they just spent like 3 years.
Six months. Yeah. Years. More likely years. Yes.
More likely years, like doing those scenes. And this was like right at the Michael Eisner time period where mm-hmm. he pops in. And so you've got a changing of the guard, as it were. And so there was just a lot of contention in the studio. Lots of things were happening. And it was right before they, you know, you went into the Little Mermaid era and beyond. So this was a thing.
Yeah, this is a really interesting time in Disney history. And if you want to learn more about it, two great resources. So one, what Chelsea already mentioned, that documentary called Waking Sleeping Beauty really goes into the backstory of what happened here and the Disney Renaissance and whatnot. But there's so much to this particular time that caused the Renaissance to happen. And Black Cauldron really was a turning point for that. But then mm-hmm. also there is a book called Disney War, which basically covers when, you know, Ron Miller, who was Walt's son-in-law, became the CEO of Disney, you know, for quite a while. And then Eisner steps in the 80s. So it really kind of starts right around there, letting you see all of the different changes that happen in the Disney studio. And they really go into this time period. They cover the Renaissance. They cover everything with Katzenberg, because Katzenberg was brought in at this time to help. And so he had his fingers in this Black Cauldron pie as well.
Mm-hmm. He was the one that actually came in and made everybody cut things, I remember.
Yeah.
And they were ticked at him.
Yeah. So I'll include links in the show notes so that way you can check out those out, because they definitely, if you are a Disney fan, those are like a must read and a must watch, yeah, especially if you're interested in the history of the studio. So going back to this film, you know, this is based on a book. So a lot of people don't know that it's based on Lloyd Alexander's book, The Chronicles of Prydain. I'm sorry, I have not read it, so I don't know how it's pronounced. So excuse my pronunciation. But I'm actually really interested because it's loosely based on the first two books of that series. And that series has about, you know, a couple more novels after that. And it's supposed to be so good, just really rich and interesting characters. And when they finally got the rights to this, they got the rights in 1971. Everybody thought that this was going to be the next Snow White or the next Pinocchio. There was no question, based on the source material, how amazing this was going to be, which is crazy to think based on the end result of it's. The end result is just a hot mess. It's just all over the place. It's very confusing. Things just happen for the sake of happening. And, you know, I think because this took two books from the series, there were also dozens of characters in the books that they had to pare down. And this is a very, very small cast. The Horn King himself was a combination of a few villains that they put together. So just a lot of struggles trying to adapt this to film and an animated film. It, like you said, it touched so many hands. There were like, everyone was a writer for this, you know, Ron Musker and John Clements, they were involved and they got taken off and they ended up doing The Great Mouse Detective. I'm sorry for anyone who was actually on this for like the entire time, because it just had to have been such a roller coaster. And then of course, like you mentioned, Katzenberg and Eisner come in and they just like hack away at everything that they've been doing. And supposedly the ending was just so scary for children. They had a test screening, like when it was mostly done, and it was so frightening, that part where the reborn, you know, where they go into the cauldron and everything is reborn, essentially, that children were literally screaming and running out of the theater in droves. Which I want to see that version.
I want to see that.
Give me that cut. Because that might have made it a bit more interesting of a film, or like if they're really going to go dark. It seems like they committed and they were going to go dark.
They were going to go there. Oh, wow.
And then on the flip side, we have a magical talking pig.
Yeah, a prophetic pig.
Yes. Oh, yeah, she doesn't talk.
It was just, you know, I felt like the main issues with this story was the fact that it was so disjointed and so hard to follow. And I'm literally no more than 9 minutes in, and I already had to go back and rewatch the first 9 minutes because I was like, I have no idea what's happening. Like, who are these people? So, yeah, like, that's just a way to like say how bad I felt like through this whole thing.
So Chelsea and I have been friends for a long time, and we bonded obviously over our passion for animation. And I remember we would just go to Chelsea's house and we would watch different animated films. And this was one that we both were familiar of. We were big fans of Disney, so we knew everything in the canon, but there's still, you know, even high school ones that we hadn't seen. You know, this wasn't the days of today where you could just hop on the internet and everything. There's a streaming service for every title ever in existence. You know, you had to know someone who had a copy or go to the store and rent it or buy it, right? And Chelsea, being Chelsea, she typically had them all, especially in Disney form. So you had this one, I believe. And we sat down and we tried to watch it. And we just, like 20 minutes into it, I think we just got the remote control and turned it off. Click. It wasn't good. We just gave up. Like, as Disney fans, that's sad. That, you know, it's bad when your true, true dedicated fans just say, nope.
Can't
not
even
today,
do this.
Junior.
Well, and what's interesting is, like, when we were talking about bringing this back up, I made that comment of, you know, I don't think I've ever finished this movie. But then after today, I actually did finish it. So there you go, Morgan. I did my homework.
Yay!
I actually finished it. But as I watched it, I was like, actually, I think I have seen the ending, but I had never like seen the full thing. I think maybe I like came in and out and just watched like where I could, you know, one of those parts, just because
or suppressed it in your memory.
It's a possibility as well. I I feel like that was closer probably to what happened, because there were moments where I was like, yeah, I do remember this part. I do remember the fact that Gorgie actually lives at the end. Like, like as it was happening, I'm like, oh yeah, this seems vaguely familiar. But once again, like, I went through the whole thing, and there, like, I even through this time as I was watching, there's a point in time where I was like, okay, where did the pig go? Like, why is the pig here? And then I had to, like, zoom, like, go back and, like, find, okay, where's the last time we see this pig and see what happens? Just so that I'd be like, why? I couldn't even, like, pay attention to know enough that the pig wasn't there for half of the movie. Like, I don't, it's just, oh, gosh.
It's a hot mess. So, it is a hot mess.
It's a hot mess.
Yeah. It's just so subpar in all the different aspects. You know, the character design, like, it feels Disney, you know? To me, it feels kind of the character designs of the era of Sword in the Stone, or even, you know, a few decades later, we get Winnie the Pooh. Like, he kind of, the main character, Taran, sort of looks like a Christopher Robin type to me.
Yeah. See, the thing is, the characters and the designs of them just scream Don Bluth and Richard Rich to me. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this was the age, I think Don Bluth had just left. Yeah. And when this came out, and then also Richard Rich, I've seen a lot of his stuff. So, like, I just am very familiar. Like, he never changed his designs.
Yeah. This is your Richard Rich tell. The villains all have a big nose.
And you can always tell just how, like, the most evil ones, except for this one, I don't think he had a nose. I think this was like a Voldemort thing.
He was a special, like, skeleton. Yeah. Yeah.
Just, you can just tell, though, like, how they're very round and bouncy, like,
and bulbous feeling. Yeah.
Bulbous. Bulbous is a great word.
Yeah. Bulbous character designs.
Uh-huh. And then even the, like, the princess, like, she has, like, a very typical
generic
look. I just, not much about either of these characters. So you're really left with the, you know, the sidekicks. And Gorgie, oh, he was so annoying. Oh, he was so annoying. And then also the pig, like, there's nothing about this pig that's special. And that was, oh, that's what bothered me. One of the things, not the only thing, but it's like the guy who's in charge, or like the head pig keeper, because of course Taran's the assistant pig keeper. So the head pig keeper, he doesn't explain, like, where this pig came from, why it has powers.
Dalbin.
Like, what? Dalbin. Yeah. So there's no rhyme or reason and no world building. And it's just kind of,
yes,
you're expected to just go with it. And yes, suspend all disbelief and just go.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, I think, with the film, or one of many, is that, right, there's just a lot of lore and a lot that is there. For example, Henwin, she is a prophetic pig. Why? Nope, no explanation. She just, it is what it is, and you move on, right? And then another thing happens, like the Horn King. Why is he a Horn King? How did he become in power? Why does he look the way that he is? Is he dead? Is he alive? Like, there's just all these things that are just set up, like, do-do-do-do-do, and we're just supposed to accept it and move on. It is what it is, and that's a struggle, because things keep happening, and you just accept it.
I wasn't even sure if the Horn King was actually the original evil king that was in, like, his powers or soul was imbued in this cauldron. So I was thinking, well, is he the king that everybody was afraid of? But no, he's just another evil king.
Like,
how many terrible kings are there? And then you have, like, a great king who's dead and has a sword under him. Like, I guess he was the one. Like, there's just no...
The sword. Like, why is the sword magical? Because
for
the plot.
Exactly. This is... And every bit of this felt that way.
Yeah. Every time... It really was. Anytime that something new was introduced, it was like, because the plot. But yeah. And I think that just goes to, so with the source material, there was just so much going on, which probably had a lot more nuance, I assume, and lore and myth building. When you're taking two novels, combining it into one 90-minute-ish movie, which it's not even that.
Yeah,
there's a lot that makes it on the cutting room floor, even before Katzenberg gets his hands on it.
Right. Oh, man. It was so hard to understand any of it. And like, I went online and on IMDb, you have like the user ratings and reviews. Mm-hmm. And I was reading through some of them, and there's some of them that they're like, oh, I give this 8 stars. I'm like, what? And obviously the guy was like, yeah, it came out when I was 11 and I was in the typical demographic. And so I just remember loving this movie. And yeah, now I look at it, but there's some things that could be better, but man, I just still love it. I'm like,
nostalgia meter.
Yes. I feel that way about my certain movies, you know, so I'm not going to judge.
Swamp Princess is good, okay?
It's good. But there's just a lot of these, it is the nostalgia meter that is
clouding leading into their judgment. Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because I was looking on the Wikipedia page, looking at the reception, you know, the different critics. It actually was pretty well received by some of the critics. Really? There's one where Roger Ebert, he gave it 3.5 stars out of 5. And it says that it's a rip-roaring tale of swords and sorcery, evil and revenge, magic and pluck and luck. It takes us on a journey through the kingdom of some of the more memorable characters in any recent Disney film. Like, well, it was the Dark Ages / Bronze Age, so like maybe they're memorable comparatively, but he noted how involving the story was and felt the key to the movie is in the richness of the characterizations. And I'm just like, how did you get that? How did you, as a movie viewer, see the richness of the characterizations? I felt that all of the characters were just so poorly developed. They weren't rich characters. Like, I just have to keep going back and saying, like, everything about this movie was just bland and boring. That very first scene, you know, we're introduced and here's this boy, Taryn, and he's basically the pig boy. And he's just such not a klutz, but he's just very inept at what he's doing.
Yeah.
Everything. He's just dropping the ball. And that's like the first 10 minutes and I'm sitting here and I'm already like looking at my watch. I'm like, this is just not fun. This is just boring. Like there's kind of cool things happening here, but it's not good. You know, and even the character, even just the design of the world is very bland. It's these browns and like earth tones, but not very pretty. It's just like a grungy film. In not a hip sort of grunge.
No, I did appreciate seeing like the 2D hand drawn animation in like the multiplane style. Like I thought that was cool because you could tell that they had actually gone and tried to create a little bit of that movement. And just seeing that kind of just makes me happy in its own right, just for the sake of being that. But that's just because I'm me. Like most normal people watching these are not saying that. So, yeah, it's like, where did you spend your time and money? And it really should have been on the script.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they spent a lot of time and money and years on the script.
Yes,
and it just, wasn't going anywhere. So, yeah, so we have Taryn and he's okay. You know, it's just so funny. Like I said before, multiple times he's demonstrated how incompetent he is. And then it's like, okay, well, we got to take Hedwyn, the pig. We got to save her. And we got to take her away. So you, Taryn, the incompetent, you are going to be the one to do it. And I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't pick him. That's not my first choice. And then at the very end, you know.
Why wouldn't the guy come and take
him? Yeah, what's he doing at home? So it's really, really bizarre. But then at the very end, he's like, see, it all worked out in the end. I knew he could do it. I taught him a lesson.
Oh, gosh. That whole, like, and that was the point where you have, like, Hedwyn, like, she's showing him what's happening. And they're, like, all walking off, like, like skipping off into the sunset.
Yes.
Like, oh, gosh. And then it's like, look, he did it. It's like,
okay, cool.
Died. Everyone. Yes.
The world could have been taken over by an undead army.
Yes.
And you wanted Taryn to do it?
Him? At the very beginning, he's like, war isn't a game. People do get hurt. Yes, that is correct. So why at the end are you not as concerned with him going in and doing all this stuff? If this pig is so prophetic and so awesome, I wouldn't let it out of my sight. I'd be like, kid, you're not ready for this.
Yeah, so shifting gears to Hedwyn, I just have so many unanswered questions. And like we were saying, there's just so many things about this movie and these characters and the premise that you just have to accept and move on. But one, why does she have powers? Two, how did the old guy discover that she had powers? Why do her powers allow her to be connected to the cauldron? Are her powers basically like the mirror in Beauty and the Beast, where she can just, or like Ursula's orb, where she can just see whatever thing that she wants to see? I mean, whatever Ursula's thing is because her. Of Flotsam and Jetsam, but like, he's basically just like a gateway. And why does the pig have to put her face into the water and do a trance? Because
how did he know the chant for this random pig?
Yeah,
like,
I feel like there's a prequel we're missing, which we will never see
about this pig. And okay, is there a prophecy that says a pig will know, like, all the line of pig succession will know where to find this cauldron? And so if that's the case, has, you know, the Horned King just been going through all the pigs? They just eat pig every night because they're going and gonna kill them all in order to find the magic one. I don't know. I don't get it. How old is the pig? I don't know.
Yeah, so you know, it's funny. Questions. Like, this pig held like the key to saving the world. And if this, everything that the pig had, you know, because the Black Cauldron, they introduced that at the beginning. Like, if the Black Cauldron is found and discovered, it's over. And I'm like, well, wouldn't it just be better to kill the pig versus go hide somewhere? That's horrible, right? And I never wanted to say, like, for the greater good, because that is a path that you can't, that is not good. You should never make the justification for the greater good. But when it's a pig, that's basically dinner, right?
I get it. Yes, I get it. Oh, I don't even know if you need to kill the pig. Why is the pig special? I just don't understand. Well, and right. The fact that if it is special, okay, halfway through the movie, now they are just saying, oh, well, actually, we don't need the pig anymore because these fairy people know exactly where to find the cauldron. So, bye, Hagrid. Be good.
Yes.
Like, oh, don't worry about her. We'll take her home. Like, why didn't we put these fairy people in charge of the pig from the beginning?
Yes.
this is what
Flora,
I was
Flora, like. Fauna, Merryweather.
Exactly. Oh, good times.
So, yada, yada, yada. He meets the princess. Let's all say it together, everyone. This is a name which no one can say. Ilonwy. So, still hard to say, despite having practiced it and saying it together. Ilonwy. But yeah, so, you know, with this story, it is based on the novels, which they themselves are based on sort of these Welsh mythologies, you know, and so not necessarily her, but her name is very much, you know, from this era and this time. And so we kind of talked about her. She's very bland, very young, too. That's something that's interesting with this film is that these characters are younger than our typical protagonists. We aren't quite given how old they are, but I would reckon that they're between 12 and 14.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a princess, which at first, you know, I'm the princess. But then later the Horned King calls her a scullery maid. And so I thought, oh, maybe she's not a princess. Maybe she was just like pretending to be a princess No, she actually is a princess. So I'm not quite sure why he called her that. Just trying to diss her, whatever.
See, she started out with a good amount of spunk and snark. Like, she just started out good. Like, come on, kid. Like, you can come with me if you want. Sure. Like, you don't have any way to get out. Mm-hmm. And he's just, Torrin's just like, oh, I didn't expect to end up like this. You know, and they're just, she's like, well, I guess you can come with me if you want. And she's like, really? I can? Well, yeah, I just said it. So, okay.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because she is really independent initially and kind of take the bull by the horns. She's going to do everything herself. And then the narrative shifts to more focusing back on Taryn as the hero, you know, when they're escaping and they're in that boat and the gate is down, she's like, oh no, the gate is down. And then
it's even
instead
before
of her,
that, it's like as they're escaping the first time and they're at the door, like the, the drawbridge, and she's like, oh no, Taryn, what'll we do?
Yeah, she kind of goes back to that damsel in distress role.
Yeah, like it was right away where I'm like, you're no longer cool.
Yeah, exactly. She had like really cool elements to her, and then it was like, oh, you're just one of those. Not saying there's anything bad with, I'm a damsel, I'm in distress, I can handle this. Have a nice day. Yeah, she's not that type of damsel in distress. So.
No, she's not. I mean, it's not necessarily that they make her a damsel in distress. It's the fact that they totally change her attitude and her like character halfway through. And then it starts out cool. And then all of a sudden it just goes back into lazy writing.
Yeah, she becomes a very passive character, as well as a lot of the characters kind of just fall into things happening to them versus them doing things to progress the plot, you know? I think about the very end with the Horn King, basically his death, no one does anything to kill him, just the cauldron's kind of going crazy because of Gurgi, and he just gets sucked into it. And so no one killed the Horn King, which... good, I don't want blood on a 12-year-old's hands, but there wasn't really, it was just kind of like, well, you're a crappy villain. Like, you just got, you know, sucked into this thing and you're dead and that's the end. It was just really pathetic, you know, especially since he does have such a frightening design. Yeah. And he's probably one of the more scarier looking Disney villains, but there's not much meat to that bone when you actually get there.
It's true. Well, and like, I think the biggest thing that he ever did was just choke the creeper goblin thing.
Yeah, Darth Vader style. Very,
like, it was a mixture of Darth Vader plus maybe like prequel to Lord Voldemort. Where at the very end, there it was like a Death Eater type disappearance. Once he gets sucked in, there's like this skull that comes out and like things that swipe around it. And I'm like, this was before its time. The Dark Mark.
Yeah, I also got Lord of the Ring vibes just with the overall story of what's happening. There's this, you know, thing that we have to go on a journey and we have to take it somewhere, and something has to be thrown into this giant pit, you know, and thinking of throwing the ring into Mordor, you know, Gurgi sacrificing himself, jumping in, sort of like very loosely. Like Gollum.
Yes, yes. But kind of sounded like it. It kind of reminded me of the Lord of the Rings, the rotoscoper version. And I'm like,
the mini skirts.
Yes. Oh, so many mini skirts.
So many mini skirts.
It was bad. Oh, gosh. So I don't really like reviewing movies that are just straight up bad movies. Like, we just don't enjoy it. And so we don't normally do this, but the fact that we're doing this movie, it's like, this was a struggle.
Well, let's talk about something that is a little bit more enjoyable, which are the witches. I thought they were a breath of fresh air and probably one of the better parts of the film. They had really nice designs. One of them reminded me, there's a Donald Duck cartoon where Huey, Dewey, and Louie from the 1950s, they're going trick-or-treating and this witch comes along. And, you know, kind of plays tricks on Donald. And one of the witches totally reminded me of the witch from that. Very, very similar. But then also, like, because the fact that there were three of them, very much, you know, one had the very long, pointy nose. Like, these are early designs of the Fates from Hercules, basically.
Yeah. I was wondering if these were supposed to be the Fates. And then you have the uncomfortable between the boobs gag. The fat one like grows really big and she's super infatuated with the minstrel. And so she like grabs him. No, he turns him into a frog. And then the frog gets stuck between her blouse. And you're just oh no, why are we doing this? And it's like, it was so weird that later on she makes the comment like, ooh, I love guys who are really forceful. I'm like, oh gosh.
Yes.
this is no bueno.
Yeah, you could get away with a lot in the 80s. Let's just put it that
you
way.
Really good. Lady
was very much reminiscent of Studio Jiggling.
Yes.
In case you don't get that reference, it's referring back to basically our Coraline episode. Laika is, we also dub Laika Studio Jiggling because it also is a fan of the bosoms that like to jiggle. So
Oh gosh.
Good times.
I did appreciate how they were going back and making these little negotiations, because it takes me back to my grandma. Her quote is, "You don't get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate." Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, this is exactly what it is. Like, you got to own the fact that you negotiated to take away the sword, which, I don't know, could the sword have destroyed the Great Black Cauldron? We don't know.
We don't Maybe. Know. All we knew is that it was a great sword that potentially could have helped him become a great warrior, which is really his only goal in life up until this point.
I guess.
So I guess, like, he's having to sacrifice something, but it's like, you just got this sword. And what, like, your whole point of this mission is to find the Black Cauldron. So what, you're to say no? Right? Don't think so, sir.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, so the witches really were a high point. I thought they brought great humor, boob jokes aside, that just, it was really more lightness to the film that I enjoyed. There's Gurgi, who's supposed to be funny, but I just found him annoying versus hilarious and like comedic relief. He's just like, what are you? Why are you? And no. Of course, we have the bard, you know, Fleur de Flamme, who... You know, he's joining their ragtag gang because. I
mean, because.
I mean, did we need him? I feel like if it just would have been the two of them, it would have been fine. And he also has a vested interest in the two getting together. Somehow. Romantically.
I mean, maybe he's just loves love songs. And so
True.
It's like me. I make a living off of writing love songs for people. So if anybody out there is in the market for, you know, getting married or such, I will gladly write your love song. And that's what this guy's doing too. He's got his magical harp where he's like, oh, I got a sale coming up.
The harp gag was actually kind of funny. It was basically like his Pinocchio nose.
Yeah.
Anytime he lied, the strings would just go ding, they'd break. Like, okay.
I agree. Yeah, that one was, I liked the harp, that accent. I don't know. Just the plot. Like, what?
Right. How did you feel, you know, going back to the love story, how did you feel about the two protagonists, you know, being such young protagonists with this forced love story?
I mean, you go back in time and love stories started a lot earlier than they do today.
Yeah. So it's just interesting to see it in.
It is.
I had no problem with it. It's cute, but it's just a lot younger than we're used to. And young love. It's cute.
Yeah, I had no issues because it didn't go anywhere. Like, any point where it was like teetering on like preteen.
Yeah, teeny bopper love.
Okay, never mind. I mean, look over here, guys. Like, so that's. Uh-huh. Basically how it ended. Yeah. So you're like, okay.
Thinking through this, I'm kind of interested to see what happens to them when they're in their 20s and that relationship. Like, does he turn into a strapping warrior? And I want to know.
Does she remember the fact that he saved everybody with this cauldron? They're skipping off into the sunset
or something.
I don't know. But like, you know, she's a princess, so she could really have anybody. So
That's true.
I mean, well, that's the other thing is, what is her kingdom? Where is she supposed to be from? Why was she there?
You know, like, how did she get captured?
Yeah.
Other people aren't looking for her. Does she not matter? Like, what is this kingdom that he's in, like the Horned King is in charge of? Where are the people? And I love that there were just like, you know, in Tangled, when Rapunzel is told by Mother Gothel, like, watch out for thugs. All of just like the generic bad guys were just thugs. They were just the perfect epitome of what a thug in one of these movies is. Just big, burly. You got some sort of weapon, whether it's a sword or an axe, and some sort of facial hair.
Yeah.
And
really bad facial acne type coloring.
Yes.
Like, some of the faces were like gray, but it was like all over. And then they
bad teeth.
They can't eat with their mouth closed. And
men with sharp teeth.
There you go.
The creators of Tangled must have really gotten their inspiration from this film.
They went way back into the vault
to the cauldron.
They're like, oh, I know where I'm going to get inspiration. The Black Cauldron. To the cauldron. Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's fun.
So, I mean, I feel like there's just so many unanswered questions that we've gone through. But yeah, it's just like thing happens. They need to get to something else. So other thing happens that gets them there. And then thing happens. And yeah, I mean, who were these witches that just were able, like they're kind of like omniscient and they knew where the cauldron was all along. And they actually were like the keepers of the cauldron. I was expecting maybe the typical in these films where like someone's soul or someone's essence is locked away in an inanimate object. I'm thinking of, you know, the tree in Ferngully, you know, with the big bad gas guy. You know, it's like there's always something. It's like we're going to trap you in this thing and then something's going to happen in a movie. Hexus, yes, indeed. And then, you know, something's going to happen where someone's going to break it open. But that didn't happen with this one. The bad king just, he was still stuck in there and he's just able to be evil through the cauldron. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. If you're looking at like, how could they have made this film better? I think they should have just scrapped the idea of doing any type of original source material and just morphed it into something that made sense. Because if you're taking that original source material and trying to like jam two books worth of stuff into one movie, it's just not working. And so you just make it work, like do something else. Like, did they have to continue down this road?
The sad thing is this is loosely based on those books. Like it went so far down the line that it's not even sort of a resemblance of what those are, but they still were trying to really hold on to this thing that they thought was so amazing and so great. And I remember reading the author, you know, where he said like, yeah, the movie's great. It's totally different than my books, but it's great. And I'm like, but it's not.
Can you be
like George Lucas when The Force Awakens came out and just be like, yeah, that was crap. That was not my story at all. That was no good. My story was way better. Like, that props to Lucas for saying that. He was actually really mad because they told him when they bought Lucasfilm, like, hey, you're not going to be involved, but don't worry, we're going to use your story. And I read this in the Bob Iger book, The Ride of a Lifetime, that just came out. You should definitely check that out because there's a lot of really great behind the scenes stories about this era and, you know, everything with Steve Jobs and... Yeah, it's really, really great. But anyways, he was just saying that, you know, they promised him it was going to be okay. And then he was ticked when they basically threw out his scripts that he had, with his outline. But yeah, this guy, he was like, yeah, it's great. Yeah, not like me at all. Nothing. I don't know her, but pretty good. Like, no. So,
oh, gosh.
Yeah, but Chelsea, we did it. We actually watched The Black Cauldron and we got
through it. This, we should get like a prize for this.
I need a cauldron pin to put on my roto jacket. Like, you did it.
I did. I finished the
badge of cauldron. Honor.
Oh, man.
I want to see. Are there Black Cauldron Disney Black Cauldron pins, like from the official trading? Oh, there's a few out there. Ooh, one with each of the main characters. A Henwin pig or a Henwin pig. Ooh,
okay,
let's
if you
see.
Were to put just Henwin, like a picture of Henwin up, would anybody be able to tell that it was this specific pig?
No, people be like, oh, Wilbur?
Yes.
Didn't know that was Disney.
Exactly. That is exactly what I was thinking.
Ooh, yeah, these pins are not good. And from the eBay listing says, this cool, all caps, hidden Mickey 5X pin series features characters from the Disney film, The Black Cauldron. Please be aware that the chaser pin Gurgi is not included. Like, oh, that one got lost. So, yeah, I mean, not totally forgotten.
Oh, gosh. He's okay. He could have been a much more sympathetic character if there would have been more of a connection between him and Taryn. Because at the very beginning, Gurgi was like, oh, you're my friend. And Karen's like, no, we're not friends. I don't know you. And also, you're just not brave. So no, go away. If they would have like had at some point in time him say, you know what, Gurgi, you are brave or something like that. And before the final like sacrifice of him, because all of a sudden it goes from, nope, I'm going to be the sacrifice. I'm going to do it. And then, no, Gurgi, you can't. And then once Gurgi decides that he's going to be the one to, he's like, no, but everybody else has friends and Gurgi only has you. So I couldn't lose my only friend. I'm like, actually, like, Ailanwy, she was a better friend to Gurgi than the other guy. Like, she actually liked him. Like, I don't understand.
he also contradicts himself. He says, you have so many friends and you're my only friend, so I'm going to take this for you. And then right before he jumps off, he's like, no, I need to do this because I have no friends. I'm like, but you just said that he was your friend. You're not making sense here, Gurgi.
You're not making sense.
So what
sense.
Is it? You have no friends, so you're sacrificing your life? Or it's because he's your only friend? Like, it was weird.
Yeah.
It was just like, we have to feel bad for someone. So, you know, the character that's not the main character can be the sacrifice. And of course, he's going to come back at the end because, as with all films, you can't let a character stay dead. A character who does a great sacrifice can't truly be a sacrifice. You know,
right.
Our episode that we just did, Soul, at the very end, you think, oh, wow, he gave that Earth badge back to 22 so she could live a life and his life is done now. He's going on the escalator to the great beyond and then, boop, just kidding, you get one more chance.
We thought you did great. So here you go.
Yeah.
But I will say, though, that the other side of that, of him just dying in the middle of a piano, like solo in his room, sounds really sad for everybody else around him. So yeah. It's better yeah. this way. It's better. It's better.
Yes, yes.
I did want to bring up one thing that is combined of the two movies. So at the very end of The Black Cauldron, once the Horn King has been sucked into the cauldron and everyone's just kind of like looking around like, what? It like pans over to these giant rats. Like, it gives the rats a significant amount of screen time. Over like,
where we've never seen these rats before. What's the significance of the rats? Were these rats living in the castle? Were they, and they're excited to go back to the castle? Like, why the rats?
Why? And it just reminded me of in Soul, where there's the cat.
Pizza rat.
And the pizza and the rat. And they like cross each other like, we're just going to keep walking here. But then it just like took my mind down this like totally long rabbit hole. So you had this, you know, the original, these rats took me to the rats in New York for Pizza Rat. And then it took me down to these videos of over during the pandemic, because there wasn't a lot of food in a lot of these places. These rats started like attacking each other, and you had videos of them like almost trying to eat each other too. And it's just like, oh my gosh, rats are so disgusting.
Yes.
Once again, I hate rodents. Oh. So it and just reminded me of our once again on the train, on the Chelsea Think train, to our mice and rats series, where we were talking yes. about this whole thing about how I dislike rats and mice in all forms. And even more reason to just hate rats and think they're disgusting. So
I'm with you.
That was my train.
Hey, it was your Easter egg for the next movie that was going to come out, featuring Ratigan, the great mouse detective.
It was.
Like, hey, if you like these rats, check out what we got coming next. So let's ask our Roto Nation question. The question was, what could have been done to make the Black Cauldron better? So Alex says, less meddling by Jeffrey Katzenberg. Also, if they followed through with the 3D Horned King effect. Ooh, yes. This technically was the first Disney film to use computer-generated imagery. So there you go. Josella says, develop the relationship between Taryn and Ilanwi more. Reduce the role of Gurgi.
Agreed.
Hear, hear. Like, he was just introduced just so they could sacrifice him and him be annoying.
It's true.
Kurt says, hire an author that makes good stories and let that person be in charge of the story, dog.
Thanks, Kurt.
To be honest, I don't remember a lot of the movie. Well, neither did Chelsea, so and me. So there you have it. That's how
Kurt.
We would have made it better.
Oh, awesome.
All right, so now it's time for the moment you've all been waiting for. Let's rate it.
Oh, this is hard. Like, 2 stars? I don't think I would give it a 1 star, because there weren't enough miniskirts to deserve a 1 star, but it was dang close. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with 2 stars.
I'm going to go with 1.5 stars. It just is really bad. It's Yeah, that's the first thing that came to mind, and I can justify it to go up higher, but not today, not today. It's 1.5 stars. It's just bland. Bland and boring in all aspects. Every piece of what you would normally look at in a film, the story, the characters, all of that. Yeah, it's just bland. It's blah. And the fact that there were no songs, you know, in our next Nerdy Couch Discussion episode next week, we're actually going to be discussing even more what makes a Disney classic a Disney classic. And I think this is a great example of what we're not looking for. And songs are a key thing. Songs are a key thing, and there are none of them. So I'm not saying that would have helped in any way, because they could have just
been...
Oh, yeah, talking about the soundtrack... You go on the Wikipedia page and there is just basically pages and pages of notes about this soundtrack. And I'm like, did I miss something? Was this soundtrack like incredible, amazing? I don't know. I don't know why whoever decided to, you know, be up at 2 a.m. updating the Wikipedia page to the Black Cauldron went all out on the soundtrack, but they did. But apparently this soundtrack was not released and it was like lost. And then later it was like released or discovered in some shop as called Taran.
Oh gosh.
So
no, yeah. It was, I felt like as I was watching it, it felt like they're just such generic, intense music. Mm-hmm. Like bum, bum, bum. Like it was just like the most generic things that you could do in order to build tension. And I just was like, I can't. And it almost felt like, they just took the same sound effect, like theme songs, and put them back in again a couple times. Like every time they were climbing outside the castle, it was like the same thing. Every time that they were like doing certain things, it just felt like this was the exact same song that you just played a little bit ago. And I was not impressed.
The big booming drums. Boom, 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 boom.
Yes.
Just, yeah. Bland. That's all I gotta say. Goes. There you go. All right, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. Before we end, I want to read today's 5-star review. This comes from Jillian Matthews, and she says, I thoroughly enjoy this podcast. I love learning about my favorite animated films from my childhood to present day. I love The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Nightmare Before Christmas, and Casper, and so much more. I've learned a few things that I didn't know about these movies that I've loved all of these years, and you guys are really funny. I'm looking forward to learning more and I'm looking forward to learning more and more things while listening to this incredible podcast. Aw, thank you so much, Jillian. That really made my day. If you haven't, be sure to leave us a 5-star review. It's the easiest, simplest way to support the show. Of course, you can always consider becoming a patron. We actually just did our monthly Rotocast where we get together with the patrons and we just talk about things that don't really fall into the realm of the podcast. You know, we were talking about my soda addiction and how I quit that. And we were talking about Disney musicals and Disney live action remakes and just really, really fun things. So it's just a fun time where we get to hang out with you, bring you onto the call, in addition to all of the other amazing perks that you get as a patron. So check that out, rotoscopers.com/patron. And thank you to the patrons for making this show possible.
Woohoo! All right, our next episode is going to be the Glen Keane special, Over the Moon. We talk about in our Rotocast how much we love Glen Keane, because who doesn't love Glen Keane? Everybody loves Glen. He's kind of the dude. He's the guy, the man, the myth, the legend. And he had a new movie. So we're going to check it out and see what we think about it. I'm excited to jump on in. Until next time, we are the Rotoscopers. Iluin? Crap, I practiced too.
Iluin. Develop the relationship between Taran and Iloni. Hold on. Every time I see this word.
Iluin.
More. Develop the relationship between Taran and
Ilana.
Why? It's because it's like confusing to look at. You know how you're supposed to say it, but then you look at it and you're like, wait, Ilanwi. Develop the relationship between Taryn and Ilanwi more. Reduce the role of Gurgi.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and